Lord Ramachandra's mission, however, was not only to kill Ravana, but also to teach mortal beings that material happiness centered around sex life or centered around one's wife is the cause of many miseries. He is the self-sufficient Supreme Personality of Godhead, and nothing is lamentable for him. And therefore, why else could he be subjected to tribulations by the kidnapping of Mother Sita? When the Lord appears in this universe in the form of a human being, he has two purposes, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashai chaduskritam, to destroy the demons and protect the devotees. To protect the devotees, the Lord not only satisfies them by his personal presence, but also teaches them so that they will not fall down from devotional service. By his personal example, Lord Ramachandra taught the devotees that it is better not to enter married life, which is certainly followed by many tribulations. As confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 9, verse 45, Yan maitunari grihameri sukham hitucham kandu yanina karayoyor ivadu kadukam tripyantine hakupana badu kabaja kandu tivan manasijam vesaheta dira. Kripanas, those who are not advanced in spiritual knowledge, and who are therefore just the opposite of Brahmins, generally take to family life, which is a concession for sex. Thus, they enjoy sex again and again, although that sex is followed by many tribulations. This is a warning to devotees. To teach this lesson to devotees and to human society in general, Lord Sri Ram Chandra, although the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, underwent a series of tribulations because he accepted a wife, Mother Sita. Lord Ramachandra underwent these austerities, of course, only to instruct us. Actually, he never has any reason to lament for anything. Another aspect of the Lord's instructions is that one who accepts a wife must be a faithful husband and give her full protection. Human society is divided into two classes of men: those who strictly follow the religious principles and those who are devotees. By his personal example, Lord Ramachandra wanted to instruct both of them how to fully adopt the discipline of the religious system and how to be a beloved and dutiful husband. Otherwise, he had no reason to undergo apparent tribulations. One who strictly follows religious principles must not neglect to provide all facilities for the complete protection of his wife. There may be some suffering because of this, but one must nevertheless endure it. That is the duty of a faithful husband. By his personal example, Lord Ramachandra demonstrated this duty. Lord Ramachandra could have produced hundreds and thousands of Sitas from his pleasure energy, but just to show the duty of a faithful husband, he not only rescued Sita from the hands of Ravana, but also killed Ravana and all the members of his family. Another aspect of the teachings of Lord Ramachandra is that although Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his devotees may apparently suffer from material tribulations, they have nothing to do with such tribulations. They are mukta purushas, liberated persons under all circumstances. It's therefore said in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, yatadeka vaishnavera vyavahara dukha nischaya janiha taha paramananda sukha. Vaishnava is always firmly situated in transcendental bliss because of engagement in devotional service. Although he may appear to suffer material pains, his position is called transcendental bliss and separation, viraha. The emotions a lover and a beloved feel when separated from one another are actually very blissful, although apparently painful. Therefore, the separation of Lord Ramachandra from Sita Devi, as well as the consequent tribulation they suffered, is but another display of transcendental bliss. This is the opinion of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Om Ganati Manandasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshusun Militam Jainatasmai Sri Gurave Namah Sri Chaitanya Manubhishtam Shtapitam Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Uttapada Kamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Scha Sri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Daganatatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savarutam Padajuna Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Scha. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesh Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhanu Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Manchakalpat Rubyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasari Guru Bhakta Vinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Martya Bhattarastviha, Martya Sikshanam, Rakshuvadhayayvanakevalam Vyabho. Kutanyatasya Ramatasva Atmana Sita Kritani Vyasanani Svarasyaya. So Martya Sikshanam, to instruct human beings, and Martya Avataras, appearing as a human being. So two purposes were combined. One was to slay Ravana, who could only be killed by a human being. So Lord Ramachandra appeared like an ordinary person, but highly elevated at the same time. He was king. And then Martya Sikshanam, with the purpose of instructing human beings, specifically that material happiness centered on sex life or around one's wife is the cause of many miseries. So this instruction entailed him showing the duty of a faithful husband, and he had to apparently undergo tribulations because of performing that duty. The husband must give complete protection to his wife. When Srila Prabhupada was discussing Krishna marrying 16,000 wives, he pointed out that Krishna very respectfully took care of each one. They needed protection because they had spent time away from their father's home. Therefore, no one would marry them. And so they appealed to Krishna, "You please become our husband." So he said, "Fine, that's good." And each one, he thought, each one has to have her own place, and she has to have a very nice place. So he respectfully treated each princess as his wife and arranged a beautiful palace for them. So he was also showing the duty of a faithful husband. Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book that Lord Krishna demonstrated the ideal life of a grihastha, and he engaged in marital relations for the purpose of having children. Otherwise, he never engaged in sex life. Therefore, we shouldn't misunderstand Krishna's dealings with the gopis to be something like our mundane sex life. So, Rama and Krishna, they both showed how to be a beloved husband. They became beloved by their wives. Because Ramachandra is the personality of Godhead, he never had any reason to lament for anything. So his lamentation and his tribulations were not exactly like ours either. But they were on the platform of transcendental bliss. And it's possible for the personality of Godhead and his consort to feel very blissful, although apparently the situation is painful. It's another form of transcendental bliss. Separation from Sita is just another display of transcendental bliss, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And Ramachandra was capable of producing many consorts if he wished. Just as in Krishna's pastimes, there were thousands, 16,000 expansions of Krishna's internal energy. But in Ramachandra's pastimes, he showed the duty of a husband who accepts just one wife. And Prabhupada said he's actually teaching by his example. He's trying to teach the devotees it's better not to get married. Because marriage is certainly followed by tribulations. And in this way, he's trying to protect the devotees, according to Prabhupada's purport, to protect the devotees. The Lord not only satisfies them by his personal presence, but he also teaches them so they will not fall down from devotional service. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada compared Ramachandra's pastimes to the activities of the six Goswamis who renounced their nice positions in the material world. They came from wealthy families, or they held prestigious positions in the nation, but they gave those up for the sake of teaching people in general about devotional service. So these are verses recited by Hanuman. He's chanting these mantras. It's said that Hanuman was hearing, along with the chief person in Kimpurush, Hanuman and the chief person of Kimpurush, they were hearing about Ramachandra constantly, always relishing the hearing. Similarly, Prabhupada was marked by his spiritual master that he likes to hear. Srila Prabhupada would always sit and listen when his spiritual master spoke, and his spiritual master marked that when the devotees asked Srila Bhakti Siddhanta whether a bhai could be initiated, he said yes, because he likes to hear. I've noted that. And we know Prabhupada was initiated in Allahabad. Once I got to visit Allahabad and Ayodhya in the same 2-week period. And it came about that I went with the Padyatra in India. They had camped in Allahabad during the 4 months of the rainy season. And when Chaturmas ended, Lokanath Swami went from Delhi to join the Padyatra and go with them to Ayodhya. And I went along from Delhi. And before we left Allahabad, we visited the homes of some persons who hosted Srila Prabhupada and his disciples in the early 1970s. When Prabhupada first went back to India with his Western disciples, he also visited Allahabad. So these people had hosted Prabhupada, and they had pictures that we looked at much later. It was maybe 25 years later. But there were the pictures in these people's photo albums of Prabhupada with his disciples in their homes. And at that time, Lokanath Maharaj was speaking. Of course, he said about Prabhupada, we could maybe say that Allahabad is the home of the Hare Krishna movement. Jai Sri Sri Vara Gopina. Jagannath Paladev Subhadra Ki Jai Sri Sri Gonita Ki Jai. And he explained, he said, because in Allahabad, Srila Prabhupada received diksha, he was initiated into the parampara in Allahabad. So we could say in that sense that Allahabad is the origin of the Hare Krishna movement. So we went to Ayodhya by foot, and we arrived there about 2 weeks later. An interesting place. Just in case you're interested in monkeys, there are two species of monkeys there. Have you been there? Yeah, I think you've probably been there, Mother. Anuradha, you're teaching the Ramayana this week at the college along with the Mahabharata. I heard it's a 1-week course and there are no details left out. So it must be going on 24 hours a day, huh? When we were in Ayodhya, the Padyatra devotees were the guests of an ashram there was a new temple built of marble and a new dharmashala for us guests. It happened that Hanuman appeared in the dream of a sadhu, and Hanuman told the sadhu, if you build a new temple in dharmashala, I guarantee that there'll never be a shortage of grain. You'll always be able to cook for the devotees who visit Ayodhya. So apparently this was Hanuman's desire, that Ayodhya be further glorified by having another nice temple, new temple, very pretty marble temple. And, you know, sadhus, they naturally like to move from holy place to holy place. So Ayodhya is on that list. So we were also there. I felt very fortunate, you know, to be in Ayodhya. And we were joined by devotees from Vrindavan. They came by train on a weekend, and we had big Harinam Sankirtan in Ayodhya that weekend. And the chapatis in that temple were as big as plates. They were, you know, this big, very, like, two or three times the size of normal chapatis. And so we were really enjoying those, you know. But you had to be careful. I was inattentive. Someone served me my chapati on my plate, and I turned to my friend to talk. And within a second, a monkey had jumped in the window and stolen my chapati. So I lost that one.
Two kinds,
yeah. Which one stole that? I don't remember. But so we made the point that Lord Ramachandra doesn't suffer any tribulation. And it was also true of the residents of Ayodhya. They were extremely happy because of being on the spiritual platform, being devotees of the personality of Godhead. He was guaranteeing them freedom from so many disturbances, just like other kings that we read about in the Bhagavatam, like Yudhisthira. When there's a proper king, then the citizens are not subjected to so many irregular climatic conditions. They don't suffer so much from the pangs of nature. And the king makes sure that everyone is eating nicely and feeling security and of their family and of their property. Krishna is actually the original king. Sometimes he's called the King of Kings because he's the supreme controller. And that word is used here in verse 2, Ishvarasya. Ishvarasya, of the personality of Godhead. Because actually, you know, everything is controlled by Krishna. So when he appears as the king, it's not surprising that everything is under his control. In Bhagavad Gita, that's stated too. Krishna says, Maya Dekshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam. So the Krishna is not an ordinary person. That's what we're supposed to understand. And the residents of the holy dhams are special also. They're fully devoted. When Lord Ramachandra went out of Ayodhya, all the citizens wanted to go with him. They didn't want to remain where he was not present. And then the opposite attitude was mentioned by Srila Prabhupada, that people nowadays want the kingdom of Ram without Ram. So they want all the nice goods of the material world, but they don't want to love God. So that's the non-devotee's attitude. This is actually the reason that people are condemned to the material world, because they're not devoted to Krishna. Therefore, they suffer tribulations. Prabhupada was really heavy sometimes describing this attitude. He said, they're all condemned demons, just as if they want to be happy independently. They've forgotten Krishna. But those who are surrendered to Krishna, they're not condemned. That's the difference. Krishna has created this world for the condemned persons. But still, he sees that they have all the necessities of life. Just like in the prison, Prabhupada said, prisoners are condemned, and the government puts them in jail. But still, the government makes some arrangement that although they'll suffer in jail, eventually they can be released. And while they're in jail, they'll have what they need. And Prabhupada said, it's the duty of the representative of Krishna to reform all the condemned persons. So Ramachandra appeared as an ordinary human. It was the request of the demigods to Lord Vishnu, actually, that brought this about. The demigods were feeling the harassment of Ravana. Vishnu said, that's all right, I'll appear. And they said, yes, and please appear as a human being, because Ravana can be killed only by a human being. So we accept the statements of the Shastra that the demigods made this appeal to Vishnu, but ordinary people, rascals, they might question it. They might think, oh, this is mythology. The demigods are being spoken of. We don't believe in demigods anymore. That was something that people believed in thousands of years ago. And in the Greek civilization, in the Roman civilization, Indian culture, these demigods are mentioned. But, you know, we've become different. We've differentiated ourselves from those. So they're actually saying, you know, now we're more advanced. We have science by which to understand how the universe is controlled. But it's actually a childish attitude. They're like children in the sense that a child doesn't investigate very far how the energy works. You know, like we might ask a child, how do the lights go on? And they'll say, well, you just turn the switch. And that's all they think about. That's how you get the light. But the adult, the parent knows that there's an elaborate arrangement for the electricity to come from a powerhouse. It has to be generated somewhere and transmitted by cables to the building so that the electricity will flow. So similarly, the supplies in this world that we make use of, the resources, like food coming to the markets. You know, food doesn't automatically come. It takes intelligent design. Farmers and the persons who transport food, they have to figure it all out, how to get the food to the markets. So similarly, speaking more universally, the supply of water in the universe, the ocean water being precipitated, coming down in the form of rain, wind being generated, light and heat coming from the sun. These must be all intelligent arrangements, not just happening because of combinations of atoms and so on, as the scientists would argue. So the scientists' unwillingness to see intelligent arrangements in the management of the universe indicates that they have a childish attitude, and therefore their criticism, you know, that the Bhagavatam or the Shastra is mythological, is unacceptable to devotees. There's a book that I brought here to class to show you. Does someone want to volunteer to hold this book up? I want to show some of the pictures. You could stand, Dina Dab. First of all, there's the case it's in. This was made by the Mediterranean BBT. This is Marisevita's kind of project. He's done about 5 books like this, and he's doing more. A Bhagavad Gita is coming next in this size. So you see how elaborate it is. This case has pictures even inside. Okay, let's take the book out. Can you lift it out? Yeah, just look. There's gold leaf edges on the paper. You can show everybody that. And the book contains 50 new paintings. Rupa Sanatan and I were the editors of this book. So I've marked some pages to show you. And you can step up kind of maybe toward the group and show them the pages. Walk across the front of the room. Here's a picture of Ramachandra and Sita on the chariot as they're leaving Ayodhya. You can see this is a kind of contemporary art style. It was done by a young Italian artist who grew up in a devotee's family and also got training in art school. And the way he painted was to... okay, now you can turn to the next page and then just show the next painting and come back the other way. He did some of his painting on canvas and then he put it on computer. He somehow put the images on a computer and then manipulated the images to get the effects he wanted in these paintings. So they're not the style of painting that you usually see that comes from India. In fact, some of the Indian people who have looked at this book in Los Angeles, for example, told the bookseller, the devotee, this is not Lord Ram as we usually see him. This is not my Lord as I usually see him. They're so used to a particular style of art that they didn't want to see Lord Ram in these contemporary paintings. They wouldn't buy the book. You know? So... Maybe that's all right, because, you know, I think when I was editing this book and looking at these pictures, I was thinking this might be the kind of art that would appeal to the younger generation of devotees, persons who are, you know, more acquainted with multimedia art, use of computers in art, that kind of thing. And sure enough, that's actually the case. When I was in Los Angeles, one daughter of one of our devotee families came and bought this book, and she bought it for her, I think her parents or her boyfriend on Christmas. And no hesitation on her part, you know, she grew up in America, but she's actually half Indian. She's part American and part Indian. But for her, this was very attractive, this kind of art. Okay, I'll stop there. Are there any comments or questions?
Yes.
How much is the book? It's in euros, I'm not sure, but I know it costs over $100. And it doesn't have gold leafing. All the editions don't have gold leafing. Only about 100 books have this gold leafing. A little expensive. Yes?
I'm wondering why Krishna is superior to Rama, in the sense that his planet is far superior to any other planet, like Kunta and Why Krishna is superior to Rama?
Why is Krishna superior to Ram? Well, we would look to Srila Rupa Goswami for an answer. He describes that among the living entities, the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifests the most qualities in the fullest way. So generally we identify six opulences that Krishna has, and we say we possess those in a minute degree. We have some percentage, you know, a little beautiful, we're a little intelligent, we're a little wealthy, little learned, but the Lord has these fully. And then it's pointed out by Rupa Goswami and the Shastras that great demigods like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, they have more of these qualities, a higher percentage of these qualities than ordinary living entities. And then the incarnations of the Lord have almost all of the qualities. The number given is 60. They have like 60 of the Lord's qualities. But Krishna has 64, and Krishna has four unique qualities, which have to do with his pastimes in Vrindavan. So differentiation is made on that basis. They look at the gunas, the qualities of the Lord. Thanks, Dean. Bhaktarik? Yes?
It's actually an animal because life size globes with paintings and population of the Mozart.
A louder, please.
Life size paintings from this book.
Yes.
All of them actually are in the population of the Mozart.
That's right, yes. Mm-hmm.
So, and sometimes, some time ago, I mean, the whole museum all full of these, you could just.
That's right. Has that been done yet? Not been done.
When they were just here, one or two times between some of them, because it's difficult to hit more.
All right.
It's like 64 or
something. Yeah. Rick pointed out that Mahaprabhu contacted Madhusevita, and he had all these files of the paintings, 50 paintings, transformed into... they're not printouts exactly, but something like printouts, only maybe on canvas or something, so they look like, I'm not sure, I haven't seen them. But the point was, Mahaprabhu wanted to have the whole collection available in large like size, so that he could have an exhibition in the Museum of Sacred Art of all these paintings. And some of them have been hung in the community hall, but not the whole collection so far. Mother Anuradha, would you maybe give us a hint? I was wondering if you could just summarize the aims of the class that you're teaching on the Ramayana. Give us some idea of what the students are learning about it this week. So the students are learning the stories, learning by stories, learning about the characters and of the individuals in the stories and their own characters. It's said about Lord Ram, the characters in the Ramayana, that none of the protagonists had character defects like Ram and Sita. You know, they were ideal in their behavior. And We would expect that because the personality of Godhead has no defects. Usually for a tragedy to take place, there has to be some tragic flaw in the hero that causes his downfall. Okay, we can stop there. Thank you very much, everyone. Hare Krishna. Glory to Srila Prabhupada.